Brendan Devaney is on the way. We'll have Brendan in studio with us very shortly indeed. Before Brendan comes in, let's look at a few of your comments. And we'll begin with Mary, who says a very happy birthday to Greg. As I was saying to Lee earlier on, that one of the reasons Greg isn't here is today is Greg's birthday. So happy birthday, Greg. Have a wonderful day. And if you're wondering what age Greg is, I am not going to tell you. How many states are there in the USA again? Can't quite remember. Why can't the government bring drugs onto the school curriculum? They're able to provide sex education to students. Drug education is just as important. I believe they do. I mean, I believe drug education is part of the various civics, as we used to call them when I was in school, the various, I can't remember the acronyms off the top of my head, to be absolutely honest with you. But certainly, is. I mean, it all starts in secondary schools. People think it's okay to take drugs at the weekend and get into a car on Monday. Drugs have been a problem in our country for years. It's only now that something is being done about it. Look, I remember the late Councillor PJ Blake, who is dead a number of years now, and it's a while since PJ was in Letterkenny Town Council as it was. PJ Blake was talking about drug driving. He was talking about the need for a drugs unit many, many, many years ago. So, you know, absolutely, this isn't something that's necessarily new. Now, we're going to go, before we bring Brendan in, we're bringing Brendan in shortly, we're going to go to line one because there's been some vandalism at Raimohi Historical Society, joined on the line by Hugh, who's the secretary of the local society in Manor Cunningham. Hugh, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Very well indeed. Hugh, tell us what happened over the weekend.
Well, it appears that on Friday night, there was an episode of vandalism down there at the Raimohi Abbey graveyard. It's an old graveyard, it's about half a kilometre southwest of the village of Manor Cunningham. So it's in a kind of a quiet area. It's off the main road, and it's kind of one of those places that people often congregate down about it, you know, at night time and that. But on Friday night, it would appear that there was a certain act of vandalism down there. The local Raimohi Historical Society would have erected an information sign at the gateway and to the graveyard. And that information sign would have contained, you know, information about the abbey and the history of it and graves and all that kind of stuff. And that, but it appears it was smashed. It was someone who seems to have lifted a stone and put it through the whole frame and the information board and that, you know. Subsequently, we also believe that there was a headstone knocked down at the other side of the abbey as well. It wasn't visible initially, but when one of our members went for a walk around the graveyard, there was a headstone that had freshly been knocked down as well. And we think that may have been done on the same occasion.
And as you have pointed out, I mean, those ruins are there from the 1500s, but there would occasionally be a contemporary family burial there. So there are people buried there relatively recently. This is, as well as being a historical area, this is also a cemetery in which people are reposing.
Yes, that is right. You know, it's only a couple of years ago since those are buried in that graveyard. There would be ancestral graves there from a lot of people in the local area where their grandparents and great-grandparents would be buried. And it's very much at the heart of the community. And it's just people are completely shocked what is obviously an act of vandalism. But you know, after all the good work that has gone into the improvements and that, we have just spent over €100,000 on that graveyard, undertaking conservation works. We had the boundary wall of it rebuilt. It had fallen down there about 4 years ago. We had all the ivy removed from it. It's been repointed. It's been strengthened. Some trees have been removed. We've spent a lot of money on that graveyard only in the last 12 months.
Yeah,
and it's very, very disheartening to see something like this happening, you know.
And those who destroyed that sign, I mean, they're not destroying a sign put up by some nameless government agency. They're destroying a sign that's been put up and funded by local people.
Absolutely. It's really an attack on their own local community. You know, we have a great community out here in Manor Cunningham. We have people who are great activists in the community. You know, they're involved in Tidy Towns, Hispi groups, the Resource Centre, all sorts. They do tremendous work for the village of its size, and it's just an attack on all that kind of work. Do you know what I mean? It's very, very disheartening to local groups.
Hugh Devlin, Secretary of the Raimauke Historical Society. Thank you very much indeed, Hugh, for speaking to us this morning, and hopefully this will not be repeated. Gardaí are looking into it as well, obviously, and hopefully we'll see this resolved. Will the sign be re-erected? Or does it have to be replaced?
The frame of it seems to be quite okay, but there was signage and stuff that all has to be reprinted again and has to be all re-erected again. It'll cost us a couple of €100, but it's not the worst part of it. As I said, there's a headstone down as well, and that family has to deal with that, you know.
Hugh, thank you very much indeed.
Okay, thank you,
Nick. Thank you. Let's take a few of your comments before we go for a break and then bring in Brendan. Caller says, my wife has a disabled parking disc. What we do when a bay is used by someone not displaying a disc, we park in behind them and block them in. Then I watch their frustration when they come back and want to get out. I then ask them to show me their disc. But the one thing I would say is if there was any form of risk of violence or retaliation, I would be thinking very carefully about that. Caller with regards to Dennis Bradley. Hi, listening to Dennis's interview, a man of extraordinary talent whom so many have relied on for his wisdom and good counsel, resulting in so much good. It was not just confined to politics, so other many aspects of his life we've all gotten to enjoy. Look at what he's done to address the problems of our harmful alcohol culture across the border. A wonderful man about whom I couldn't say enough. And that's from Pat Harvey, who is the former CEO of the Northwestern Health Board. And that's interesting indeed, and words of importance there. So, Dennis Bradley, lots of tributes being paid. We'll have more of those tributes in a bit, but right now I'm just going to click a different button because you can stop looking at me and you can start looking at the more important person in this room. Brendan Devenny, good morning. I'm just going to be really... Just give me a second now. I'm just going to turn this camera around to see if I can get it to face you. That's all right. That, there you have it. That works well. Brendan, let's talk about GAA, and you're very welcome. It's going to be, I'm sure, a very busy and a very joyous DL debate tonight.
Yeah, it's certainly. What a weekend. Written off, I suppose, going into as huge underdogs.
I thought all Derry had to do was turn up.
Yeah. And how many times do we get over excited about league performances and that? And I suppose the Derry record, you know, the back-to-back Ulsters, but, you know, one of them we played poorly in the final last year was penalties. They got to the All-Ireland semi, of course. Monaghan also got to the All-Ireland semi, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not as if, you know, they were treated, I think, because of the league final and because of Dublin. Now, Dublin were missing quite a few players. Mm-hmm. Desi Farrell said after, you know, that Dublin were completely overestimated where they were at. So the fact that Derry beat them and the game that was in it, I think everybody just kind of thought this Derry side's a bit unbeatable. They'd be picked on a goal off, but that certainly wasn't the case. And the mastermind again, Jimmy McGuinness, and, you know, his plan and then how it was put out by the players and how they took it on board, and Donegal controlled the game. And again, long kickouts, you know, Derry's tactics were much similar to the Dublin game. And once Donegal sat and were rigid and were going to counter-attack, Derry had to change tactics. He didn't do that. And, you know, Donegal, as I say, like profited from some howlers from the Derry keeper being out up the pitch. And I'm sure many Derry fans are wondering, what is he doing out there for kickouts? But listen, Donegal profited from that and thankfully won the game.
And good to see some young lads showing themselves very well at the weekend as well. Important that new talent is coming through and some great new young players on that pitch.
Yeah, and you know what, just looking at, you know, the injuries before the game, obviously the likes of McGee being back in and Brendan McCall were huge. We weren't sure if they were going to start, but it just gave our team a nice balance. Because up until that point, really, Mark Curran, don't know that, was our only defender. So we're playing with two actual defenders, you know, and it just shows you how the game has changed. They're your only defenders in the team. The rest of the lads that are all playing there are half forwards or midfield. So when Donegal get the ball, if they can sit in and defensive and do their jobs, when we break in the pace, we're breaking with the fitness. And I think a lot of people, you know, Jim's coaching methods, you know, the philosophy is actually quite straightforward in terms of how do you play the game, but it's Jim puts his belief in the team, and there's a real like fitness level, and there's a real, I suppose, energy with the lads. So they sit in, they deep, they do their job, and when they break, then they break with serious pace, and that was the game plan. You know, Derry people might say they had 7 or 8 drops short, 7 or 8 wides. You know, they conceded those bad goals. So they'll maybe look to sides of the game they didn't really play well, but I think a lot of that was down to Donegal. Donegal looked like a proper team really together, yeah. Knew what everybody's jobs were doing. Derry became a bit individual then against that game plan. And again, the heart record against Jim, it comes through again. It's never beaten him again, his team, and never looked like beating them on Saturday.
It's interesting looking at the paper this morning and several articles at the back of the Donegal News this morning. And the message is always the same. The message is, now lads, games aren't won on paper. Now, it's a great start, but now don't forget notes. It's almost as though we now have to start rein yourselves in now, lads. Let's not be making any mad predictions for later on in the year. Yeah. But this certainly bodes well, you know, potentially for Ulster and perhaps beyond.
Yeah, well, listen, I think because Derry were such out-and-out favourites for Ulster, you'd automatically think now Donegal are favourites, even though we won't be playing up on that, or, you know, it's there's so many good teams still left in it. I think Ulster was always going to be difficult to do the three in a row. There's this thing about Derry winning the league and not being able to back it up, which has happened in their previous history as well. But yeah, listen, the turnaround's so quick, you know, obviously Sean Patton's injury, you know, Mareaney went down dead well. It was one of his kickouts led to the third goal as well. So or the third goal that Lynch was caught out of his nets for. So, you know, Donegal have backup all around the pitch, but they get people ready for big championship games now. And I was just looking at Tyrone, obviously, went to extra time.
Yeah.
They have a day less. You know, that's real, real tough. You know, you think about those lads, you know, going to work maybe today. You know, they have a big game coming next week, championship. You know, how do you get the body right in that? It's asking a lot of players. I think this season's much too condensed now. We can't be playing league straight into championship. Yeah. And then, you know, we thankfully, I think Saturday evening's game was entertaining. It was a great game because it came so quick off the back and made a good evening. It got the feel of championship back into it. But I just think now for Donegal to get ready for a big game like Tyrone and vice versa, it's difficult.
I have to say a word for Cavan as well, because the lads from Cavan put on a great show at the weekend. And I mean, you know, to go that far and then to lose the way they did, I mean, heartbreaking. But I mean, in fairness to Cavan, I mean, they can take some heart from that.
Yeah, listen, I think it's 41 years since they beat Tyrone in the championship. They have a terrible record against them. I remember a few years back, the drawn game as well, where they could have beaten them, and they've come close a few times when I was playing. And, you know, you'd have to say, that's the thing about Gaelic, you know, in terms of being out of it. You know, 8 points down, and I know Hampshire get the black card, but Tyrone kicked a couple of points after they get the black card, and you're thinking, game over. And yet they conjured up, you know, that thrilling finish. And, you know, there is definitely a kick in, Kevin, but, you know, you'd say Tyrone should have controlled the game, should have seen it out. But as I say, you know, fair play to Kevin. It would have been nice to see them come through, Donal, because they've had a tough couple of seasons ever since, of course, their famous victory over us in the Ulster final. They went down the divisions again then, so they're on the way back up. But I think Tyrone's forward power, really, they should have seen out the game. But, you know, lessons will be in that for Doher.
Interesting game coming up. Donegal under-20s taking on Derry and McCool Park in a couple of days' time. And I'm sure a lot of the under-20s now are going to be looking to the senior team and thinking, oh, McGuinness back at the helm, they're winning matches again. I mean, I'm sure a lot of those under-20s are going to be playing their hearts out with a view toward moving up.
Yeah, well, there's been few of them have been in and around the squad before the season started there for them. I suppose getting that bit of experience. And I think that's the big thing. You know, when you have very much a man like Jim that's so invested in Donegal, and he's there for 4 years, Donal, so those lads very much will be saying, we want to be part of this. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously SP Barr's doing a great job there, Brendan Kilcoyne, which does work for us here too, and helping them, and you know they're going well, and those young lads now will be looking to thinking, you know, next year can I get into this side, can I be part of it, because there's no doubting that where Donegal are at now, you could see the buzz. I mean, been out on the pitch, and many people listening would have been there on Saturday evening. There was such a buzz about the place. There was such a, I suppose, pride in the players, and everybody wants to be part of that. And so for those young lads, it's certainly, listen, they'll not be looking past their own championship now, of course, but they'll be thinking, you know, if I progress, I could get into the squad.
A word or two for the hurlers, and the fact that Donegal's hurlers beat Mayo at the weekend as well.
So yeah, Nicky Raggett going well, Niall Cleary's coming on. Just the hurlers, what can I say? You know, again, a resounding victory at O'Donnell Park. That's a home patch, and, you know, there's something about Mickey McCann's team and how they just keep improving. You know, every year, Donegal are going up and up and up in terms of their abilities and their strength in that. And, you know, I'll not say punching them above their weight because, you know, that's too easy a cliche, but certainly Mickey and his backroom team are getting the best out of what we have time and time again. And yeah, they're certainly, listen, we'll be hoping they'll go all the way in the Nicky record and, and the same in the division next year.
A DL debate tonight. Obviously, Donegal Derry will be at the heart of the discussion. Some interesting guests joining you.
Yeah, Carol Keane's coming on, and Kevin Casty as well, former county star. So, Cahar writes for Irish News, and he's very insightful as well. Yeah, so always good to get his. And of course, he's a Derry man, which he actually went to the game just as a supporter on Saturday evening. Yeah.
There'll be no rubbing it in at all.
We'll have to take it easy on the Derry. We've got a few Derry listeners, so we won't go too short of a... We'll have to give them an odd dig, you know yourself.
Oh, of course. And then Niall Cleary, obviously, former hurler, is going to be here to discuss the Mayo game as well.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. He'll come on, and Niall, of course, is a talented player and former county star himself, so... He'll be on to give us a few words on that 7-point victory at Donegal over Mayo on Saturday. It was in Letterkenny. So, yeah, listen, great stuff, and we're hoping, as I say, the hurlers go all the way in the Nicky record, and our lads now can take Tyrone and make an Ulster final.
So that's the DL debate on tonight after the 7 o'clock news, and then available as a podcast on our website then for the rest of the week and beyond. Brendan Devaney, thank you very much indeed. No, this is the 9 to Noon Show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you until 12 noon, which is about 33 and a half minutes away, if my maths are to be believed. And I would trust my maths now about as much as I would, you know, yourself like. Right, question. Are you interested in motorsport engineering? An event is taking place in the ATU in Letterkenny on this Wednesday, the 24th, at 6:30. So if you're going to discuss motorsport and engineering, who better to speak to than to Rory Kennedy, who joins us in studio. Rory, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Rory, this is an interesting one, because obviously there's a huge commitment to motorsport in Donegal. Look no further, obviously, than the rally, in which you've taken an interest over the years, I think it's fair to say. I mean, that there is a tradition in Donegal, and important, I'm sure, for people like yourself to see that tradition continue.
Oh, absolutely, Donal, you're absolutely right. There's a huge interest here. We have a huge car culture in Donegal, and the rally, of course, is the highlight of that every year. But this initiative that we've come up with here, this is something that I have seen that was undertaken somewhere else, where an engineer with the Hyundai World Rally Team, a fellow called Richard Brown, who's from Killarney, actually, he hosted an event one time for, you know, to give an insight into his career and how he ended up working on these World Rally teams. And I think he got about 6 or 7 students to turn up to an evening that he had one time. And I just got the idea from him, you know, back then. That was a couple of years ago. And I got the idea from that. And I thought to myself, you know, we have a lot of people who work in motorsport engineering living among us here in Donegal. And it's a very wide spectrum, really, because we're chatting F1, World Rallies, motorcycle racing, engine building and so on, and even students that are currently doing motorsport degrees. So I thought it'd be a good idea to combine all these people together and maybe host an evening. And our target audience really is, you know, young people who are transition year, maybe students who are considering leaving school or coming up to leaving school, and also people who are currently working in apprenticeships, that these engineering opportunities are there, you know, in the world of motorsport, and maybe our guest or panelists will be able to advise a lot of the people on their journeys.
It's interesting, because in motorsport, and particularly if you're working, you know, on the day, as it were, it's very, very different to other engineering, in that you're saying to people, you've got to get it done, but you've got to get it done in 35 minutes, or you've got to get it done in 16 minutes, because we have to have that car out on a stage in 20 minutes.
Yes.
Time, you know, so you're saying to people, you know, this is an area where the rewards are huge, but the pressure is going to be massive as well, because I'm sure, you know, when you're, you know, at Parc Fermé, or when you're, you know, between stages, you know, during a rally, I mean, it's mad what's going on around you.
Well, it's mad what's going on around us and all the teams. And, you know, the gains are very marginal now, because the drivers and the teams are all very close, you know, in terms of their own performance. Like, so any advantage you can get by what your engineer can give you is a huge advantage. And that's only one role, Donal, really, in the motorsport complex. A lot of these people who we have coming on Wednesday night are designers, and the design work is all done pre-events, you know, obviously in office and stuff. And this is all done long before events. And these people are very innovative, and, you know, they're constantly researching and they're constantly developing different products. And this is all done in the house, and then the benefits all happen maybe further down the line, you know. So, you know, for example, with Brian Geller, who's he's a senior designer with Scuderia Ferrari Formula One team. Like, Brian actually lived in Maranello in Italy as part of the design team, and his story's incredible. Like, Brian comes from Kerikeely, he lives in Rathmullen. He lives among us, and it's incredible to have somebody like that that's prepared to give up his time and come and share his experiences with us. And I'm hoping that he will, you know, motivate maybe younger people and show younger people that there are pathways to these incredible opportunities. Like,
and you've got people like Paul Murphy, who's a development engineer with Toyota. I mean, you know, again, you know, a hugely influential and knowledgeable person in the whole field.
Exactly, no. And I suppose really the difference between Brian and Paul Murphy is Brian really chose the academic route to go his way, whereas Paul, he chose the scenic route, whereby he left school early and he went to become a mechanic and so on. And he found a way then to the Toyota World Rally Team. And he was a development engineer and worked with all the top drivers there, like Ott Tanak and Sebastian Ogier, who won Croatia World Rally this weekend. Like, Paul will work with them teams and those drivers, which, you know, incredible achievement. And as I say, he's prepared to come and share his experience with us. Like,
and it's not all cars. There's bikes represented as well.
Absolutely. We've got a real star living among us here as well, in Kilmacrenan, Rhys Irwin. And Rhys is the current rider for the Suzuki British Superbike team. And he's had huge success in the past couple of years. And he's gone from strength to strength. And I suppose the ironic thing about Rhys is that he is a student in ATU, and he recognises that, you know, he needs to have an educational backup if his motorcycle racing career doesn't develop. That he's also got this backup as well, where he's currently studying quantity surveying here at ATU, which is, which shows that he's looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And he's not just putting all his eggs in the one basket either.
But also will always maintain. And one of the things you notice is people develop an interest in motorsport and they stay within motorsport and they keep even, they mightn't be, you know, directly involved driving or navigating or whatever anymore, but they're still there. They're still involved. They're still taking a huge interest. And that's something that's going to be a feature, particularly in this particular region.
Oh, I think so. Going back to the awareness and the culture we have here in Donegal and in the Northwest for rallying and motorsport in general, you know, there's huge interest anyway. And even for the passive person, people enjoy coming to watch the rally, and the economic benefits that Donegal benefit from are huge as well. Like, so this is just a wee bit of a diversion, Donegal, into something different. And, we have Kevin Geller there too. And don't forget, Kevin is an ex-student from ATU in Letterkenny as well, and he's gone on to develop KGP racing and rally engines, and that's a huge business, and he's based down in the foothills of Knockalla, which is another iconic stage in the rally scene. And Kevin is a very accomplished driver as well. He won the National Rally in Leash yesterday, the Burr Rally in County Offaly yesterday. So, like, again, very interesting story to hear from him as well. And again, he can advise students as well on what career paths to take.
Yeah, and there's also, apparently, there's a co-driver with over 50 wins to his name going to be around the place as well. I mean, you know, in fairness to yourself, Rory, you've been one of the most respected names in rallying in this county and beyond.
Well, thank you for saying that. Donald, all right, I suppose. I didn't make a living from rallying. Now, I realised that, you need to have a job, proper job, and you live in the real world as well, but I've had a fantastic rally career, which I'm very proud of, obviously. In fact, we were in the Czech Republic just the weekend there past, and we with Donna Kelly and the Mats van der Brand BMW team, and we finished third overall there. So, I've had fantastic opportunities to work in all the top teams as well. I'm quite happy to share that with people if they want to hear that story too.
So, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting one, because you'll be saying to people, oh, here are the stories. But then there's also maybe this is how you can make this your story. And who knows what's going to come out of that? Who knows what young person is going to walk in that door going, oh, I would be interested in this. I wonder what may happen. I mean, when you listen, when you watch Formula One these days and you hear, the strategy being discussed by this wonderful broad Fermanagh accent. I mean, it's really lovely hear, it's fantastic,
I like hearing
her. And she started in Queens, I think, didn't she?
I think she went from Queens, and then she worked for McLaren and the design team as well. And I'm not quite sure if I say this correctly, but Sky Sports, whatever way they managed to entice her to come and work in their production, or in their broadcast team. And now you've got expert opinion from Bernie Collins.
And in fairness, Bernie is brilliant to me, you know, and she knows what she's talking about, you know.
Absolutely, is unbelievable. And, you know, she just comes from Maguire's Bridge, I think, in County Fermanagh.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and she's incredible to see these sort of people make it to that level. You know, you can always relate to them, you know, and I think it's brilliant to have that. And don't forget, we have Elaine McElwee and Mia Cooper, and they're currently in Brookes Oxford University studying motorsport technology and motorsport engineering. And they're in their second year. They're just, I think they're just finishing their second year now. But I think those 2 years are unique insofar as, well, they're both, well, Elaine comes from Milford. She was at school in Loretto Convent in Letterkenny. Mia comes from Manchester, and they're both friends studying in Brookes University. But they're at their second year, and the real purpose of them being there is to maybe relate to other younger people who will be there as well to show they have done this, and they are now at their second year. It's a live sort of opinion of where exactly they are in their prospective careers. Yeah. Like, and I think their story will be fascinating.
It will. Yeah. And you know, and the warning to people to go is, look, beware, because I suspect if you get sucked into this world of motorsport, you're not getting out. I mean, it's a bit like the Hotel California. You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's motorsport in general is a very thrilling and fascinating sport, you know, and a lot of people can relate to it, but even watching it on TV, I think it's very, very spectacular and so on. And even to work within it, and the opportunities that are there are unreal. Like, so anybody that's interested, like, we're appealing to everybody to come to us, students, even people who have a passing interest in this, to hear the stories from our expert panelists. And really the target audience, though, for people to make an impression is on the younger people who are at sort of crossroads in their career and their schooling and trying to decide what's their next step and what direction they should go.
Rory, it's been an absolute pleasure. We wish you all the best. The event is taking place on Wednesday. It's the 24th. One more thing you want to mention?
One more thing. I would like fully to thank the ATU and Letterkenny for coming on board in this. Thomas Dowling's the head of school engineering down there. And once we contacted Thomas, he fully endorsed it and he fully backs it. Both Thomas, Emmett Kerr and Charles Young were indebted to them. ATU have provided us with an incredible lecture theatre to hold this event, and of course without that it wouldn't be possible to do this in that environment. And we're also going to stream it as well, so it's going to be available to put out online afterwards as well.
And it's getting underway at 6:30 at the ATU in Letterkenny on this coming Wednesday, which is the 24th of April. And we have all the details there, and we'll put it up on our own social media as well. And I'm sure it'll be available via the ATU website as well. Rory, thank you very much indeed. That's Rory Kennedy there, as we say, one of the biggest names in rallying in the Northwest and beyond. Proof that once you get into this business, you're not going to be leaving anytime soon. But if you want to be spending your weekends in the Czech Republic around for fast cars, Rory's the man. He's the man to emulate. Rory, thank you very much indeed. Cheers, you take care. Okie doke. Let's take a look at some of your comments before we go any further. Caller asks, are Donegal going to be able to hold on to Jim McGuinness when the FAI comes calling looking for a national manager? Interesting one. We need a referendum on neutrality and speech laws. We need a referendum on the pandemic treaty. So says a caller. Is there going to be no discussion about Israel killing so many innocent people, including 8,000 children, and trying to get Iran involved in a world war by bombing their government building? And then America, Britain and the EU are being asked to put sanctions on Iran. A call from Friday, I believe. I worked in that day centre in Carn Donagh. Caller says the bus used to come from different areas every day. They got their dinner and they had a hairdresser. Some got washed in there by staff. I hope it comes back. Best of luck to the committee. That's an issue that was being discussed by Greg on Friday. Now that the caravan season is here, people will need gas. My gas ran out at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. I needed a refill. I went to the nearest shop in our seaside resort in Donegal. I got a 35 kilogram refill. It cost €125. I thought that was a bit dear. The following day, I went to the next town and they were charging €109. I normally get my gas in another place not far away, about 15 miles, decided to take a drive with an empty tank. It was charging €80 for the same size. How can these shops charge €45 more for the same size of tank? I thought flow gas was price regulated. I know there can be some regulation on the gas that you get from tanks, etc., that's provided nationally. I'm not sure what the regulation situation is with regards to cylinders. Caller says he has a family member in a nursing home. They were getting visits from an undertaker who was asking if he had made his funeral arrangements. The nursing home has put a stop to this, but he wanted to know if this is standard practice. I've not heard of it before. getting visits from an undertaker in a nursing home asking about funeral arrangements. I don't know about that one. Coming from someone that works in a hotel, I've been asked multiple times to print boarding passes for Ukrainian refugees that were, Ukrainian residents, excuse me, that were returning to Ukraine for summer holidays, Christmas holidays and their family members' graduations. They return because they're financially better off in Ireland, better off than Irish people that are working full time on the minimum wage. They have a disposable income of €230 per week as they have no expenses, and if they decide to move out, the government pays toward rent, then they sublet and get another income. The young Irish are leaving not because they can't get a job, it's because they don't want to be living in their parent box rooms in their 30s. But I know the financial arrangements for people coming in from Ukraine are changing, and changing radically, and have already started to change. Does anybody know where or from whom you can get Tory clay? So is asking a caller. That's one if you're able to help there. Good morning. Please ask your listeners if anyone is experiencing a brick wall response when trying to cancel their Sky subscription. If I can share my own experience briefly, up until last week I'd been with them for 18 years. Their adamant refusal to acknowledge my request, hence repeated sales, spiel, etc. Finally, I contacted Consumer Protection, eventually obtained an email address to which I sent a letter and addressed FAO, the chief executive. That soon got their attention. Today, I'm Sky free. I wouldn't wish for anyone to be subjected to this unacceptable treatment that I experienced. My household needs changed, and I simply no longer needed their services. Thanks in advance. That's an interesting one indeed. Now, Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh, on the 11th of September 2017, put a question to Donegal County Council. The question was that this council submit a, that this council consider introducing on a pilot basis a text alert system to allow members of the public report illegal parking on disabled parking spaces, similar to that in Goree. And the response was, the council considers it is not in the public interest to set up a system whereby members of the public are reporting to the local authority on other members of the public in relation to traffic offences. Members of the public should report matters of illegality to Gardaí in relation to the use of disabled parking. Regular spot checks around Letterkenny indicate the misuse of disabled parking spots is not perceived to be a problem. That was the situation as outlined by Donegal County Council to Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh on the 11th of September 2017. Now, we had Dennis Bradley on earlier, and a caller says, Dennis mentioned the Army and the RUC would have been serving the British government. At the same time, members of MI5 and MI6 were also meeting members of the IRA. So both sides were helping the British government, so says a caller. Now, we're going to go to a call now. Philip is with us on line one. Philip, good morning to you.
Yeah, how are you doing, Donald?
Very well indeed. We know there's been some power outages and issues in the Malin Head area, Philip, and this had an impact on yourself and your business. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, last Wednesday, the electricity went off 7 o'clock in the morning, roughly the half 7, and then it came back on. And then we were on a bed and breakfast, and we went to turn on the water, and we couldn't get the water. So we pumped the water and we harvested the water off the roof. So we got a plumber out and we got an electrician out, and hopefully the pump is still in guarantee. We got a new pump from the masons. But I was asking around a few places. I went down to Bamba's Cafe, the same crack on the Wednesday. Their pumps went. I was down in the Cairn Drona nursery, and their computer system all went down. But my point is, you know, and every one of them saying it was a power surge. And my point is, like, in this kind of cost of living crisis, businesses, small businesses are getting it tough. And then electricity, you know, surges like that, blowing your, you know, your machinery and stuff like that. You know, who really, who's to blame? Is it the ESB? And on the same week in Malin Head, our telephone lines and internet were down for nearly 10 days. They're promoting Malin Head as come to Malin Head, and you know, and it is, it's the most beautiful place in the world. I might be biased, but you know, when the infrastructure is impacting on your business. Small businesses are getting really, really tough. And, you know, but I phoned your researcher. I didn't actually mean to come on, but, you know, just find out what my call-out is there other businesses on that Wednesday who had power surges, who got their pumps or computer systems blown? The plumber come out and the electrician would come out. They wouldn't open our pump because they said if they open the pump, that's the guarantee gone.
Yeah. So this happened on Wednesday last. It was the 17th of April.
Yes, 17th.
So a power surge blew your water pump and at least a couple of more that you know of in the same area.
Oh, in the Cairndona area, like the Bambas Cafes in Cairndona and the nursery, the Cairndona nursery, Moss Road in Cairndona, like, you know. So it's just that I don't know what you can do. Hopefully we should be okay because we have a new pump and the masons, you know, give us a new pump saying it was under guarantee. So, but other than that, that would have been a €700 cost to us.
Would it be covered under insurance?
I don't know. Well, house insurance, and that's another thing. Our house insurance has doubled, you know, like in the last. It seems that they really, really seem to be impacting on small businesses. You know, everybody's trying to, you know, keep their head above water. And people keep shoving your head back down and under the water again.
Well, the question.
So I don't know what the conclusion of this will be. I just want to, you know, put it out there and ask the, you know, the rest in the show, or even North Donegal, did they have a power surge that took out their computers or water pumps?
Yeah, and Philip, thank you very much indeed for that. So it was last Wednesday, the 17th of April. That's Philip there calling us from Malinhead. Just asking, did you have issues if you're in the Malinhead, Cairndona area, or indeed further afield in Ashon or beyond, did you have a power surge that blew a water pump, a €700 cost? Philip's was covered under warranty, thankfully, but other businesses and people in the area reporting issues like that as well. Have you had that experience? It's an interesting one. Let's talk about diabetes because we had Paul Gillespie earlier on and we have a comment from Rosie who says, diabetes care is ridiculous in the Northwest. Letterkenny University Hospital should be fighting for us in the local community who need this care. If we had taken seriously ill during COVID, we would have been in serious trouble. Now, caller says, I'm beyond astounded to hear about the defect of endocrine consultants at Letterkenny University Hospital. This is akin to developing world medicine. I can't imagine the number of diabetics having entirely avoidable amputations, losing their sight and progressing to stage 5 kidney disease, leading to early and unavoidable deaths. Another caller says, I'm type 1 diabetic, 24 years now. The care is way below standard. I have not been seen in 2 years. I looked for a monitor about a year ago as mine was giving bother. I was told to contact the manufacturer of the monitor. I had no clue where to even start. If Letterkenny cannot attract doctors to work there and so many doctors and nurses are leaving, then you have to ask the question, who is in charge when it's failing so miserably? We all know for years it's getting worse and worse. If we ran a business like the hospital, it would have changed managers years ago or closed down. Now, another caller saying, just standing in the queue in the post office to pay my bills, watching all the foreigners lift their free money and not a bill to pay. Great country if you're not Irish. I'm a nurse in dialysis in the UK. 50% of the population have diabetes. My mother had diabetes type 1 for 46 years and never progressed needing dialysis. The cardiologist must be so busy and all the other doctors. I'm horrified at what's going on in Donegal. People need to understand that what's happening is in their health is avoidable. Type 2, if mismanaged, will lead to amputation. This needs to start with diet, so says a caller. Very little happens above the line from Galway to Dublin, especially in the Northwest. Health services and the A5 are overlooked. Big money is spent on consultant reports left on a shelf, but Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have neglected the county as their seats were always regarded as safe. In fairness, since Piers Doherty arrived at the scene, things may change in the right direction, so says a caller. Did you know it's Earth Day and we've been sent a little limerick? A caller says, the state of the planet's alarming. Modern methods are harming. Find a solution and fight the pollution. Then nature on Earth will stay charming. Happy Earth Day. And so say all of us. comment from a caller. Congratulations, Donegal footballers and Waterford hurlers, on your great wins. My sports mad Waterford-based nephew with a Donegal mother assures me he won enough on a modest combined bet to pay for match tickets and an overnight stay on their next fixture up the Daisha August Nakano. So says the caller, lovely. I was at the game in Derry on Saturday. Caller says no parking for the disabled. It is a disgrace. Now, before we leave, and we will be going very shortly, there has been one major issue on the agenda this past couple of days, and that is the findings of unlawful killing verdicts in the inquests into the deaths of the 48 victims of the Stardust tragedy. Joined on the line by Antoinette Keegan, who was a survivor of the Stardust. You know Antoinette's name. She's been one of the key spokespeople for the campaign. Antoinette, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Antoinette, I mean, I'm sure it's been a whirlwind for you and for the families and for the survivors over the past number of days since the verdict was announced last week. To what extent has this changed everything?
Sorry?
To what extent has this changed the campaign and where it's going? Yeah, it's changed everything, I think.
It has changed everything because for 42 years, right, we never had a verdict. We only had a medical verdict. We spent 2 minutes in the coroner's court, right, in 1982, March 1982, and it was literally a medical verdict we got. We've been fighting and fighting and fighting for a proper verdict, and we've been told off establishments and Taoiseachs and ministers, right, that we have a verdict and there's no more we can do. So it is very important. It has been a roller coaster for the last couple of days. Like, it's been like absolutely phenomenal, like the result that we got on lawful killing. For the first time in 43 years, the truth is on the record now that the 48 victims, including my two sisters, Mary and Martina, were unlawfully killed.
One of the real shadows and injustices that was visited on the family was an initial report in the immediate aftermath of the Stardust used the word arson, and that was a slur that it was very important to you and to your family and to others to get completely expunged and removed from the record. Now, it was removed some years later, but the fact that the word arson was used was a horrific slur.
It was a slander to the 48 that went to the grave. It was the same for all the people that attended, the patrons that was there that night, including myself. 841 people altogether in that building in the Stardust that night. And for probable arson to be the conclusion of the tribunal inquiry was absolutely disgraceful what they'd done to us. And it took myself, my mother, Gertrude Barrett, Eugene Kelly, and Mrs. McDermott, right, all them, they were women that lost children. Mrs. McDermott lost three, my mother lost two, Mrs. Barrett lost one. Eugene Kelly lost his brother, and I lost my two sisters as well, being a survivor. It took us to go to the government, right, and with a submission, nothing but the truth. Then they eventually gave us got permission for the five lads to be exhumed, to be identified. That was the first issue that was to be sorted out. And then they gave us an independent examination into the cause of the fire by an independent senior counsel. That was, the first one was John Gallagher, and then we found that he'd been involved in the first inquest, so he had to be taken off. Then we got Mr. Paul Coffey, who's now a High Court judge. He examined it, and he said, like, you know, that the fire wasn't in the roof space at all, and there was no new evidence, and that it is a hypothesis, right, that arson was on the record and it should be removed by some form or some means, whether it be through the Eruptus and the doll. It was removed from the public record, and that was in 2009. And I contacted the principal officer of the Taoiseach, who was Bertie Hearn at the time, and asked him, like, the arson has been removed. Is there going to be a criminal investigation done now? And he said, no. Is the owner going to be pursued for the money that he got for arson, now hasn't been arson? He said, no. I said, so what's going to happen now? He said, nothing. Nothing. It's over. It's over. So my response to that was, right, it's not over, not by a long shot. And continue to campaign and campaign and campaign. Then Tommy Bruin had a commission of investigation in the Dáil, right, for a motion for all parties to agree on. And we had a letter from Fianna Fáil, right, that they would go with it. And on the 11th day, we were let down. So we were left fighting again. Then we got the Pat McCartan report. His conclusion was, right, like it was if the lady that made the phone call at 1:43 about the fire in the roof space is still alive and she can prove that she made that call and seen the extensive fire in the roof space, well, then Keane and Coffey are wrong. I had to go to that lady's house, right, and ask her to sign a statement. That was put in the application to the Attorney General for the inquest to be reopened. The 30th of November, we delivered 48,000 cards to the Attorney General. That was 1,000 cards for each victim. That was us after travelling north, south, east and west of Ireland on a campaign star, right, for people to come to us and sign the cards so that we could give them to the Attorney General to say it was in the public interest that the inquest was reopened. The 25th of September 2019, the Attorney General ordered that the inquest be reopened. You compare it to a Hillsborough.
Antoinette, it's an ongoing story and it keeps going. We expect a state apology in the Dáil tomorrow. There's talk of a potential redress scheme. You're saying it's vital that the families are fully consulted on what happens next by the government. But Simon Harris will stand up tomorrow in the Dáil. All parties will address this in the Dáil tomorrow. And the most important thing, well, in the immediate term, the most important thing is that your sisters and the other 47 that died, or the other 46 that died in that tragedy, will be absolutely exonerated and will be absolutely honoured, and the families will hopefully get some of the peace they need. Antoinette, we will follow this and we will be thinking of you tomorrow as Simon Harris makes his historic statement in the Dáil. But Antoinette Keegan, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. We're thinking about you and we're thinking about the others. Thank you very much indeed. That is the 9 till noon show for today. Thank you to Shannon and to Caroline. Thanks for all who took part in the programme this morning. Most of all, thank you to you for listening. For myself, Donal Kavanagh, until tomorrow, have a very good day.